What do three Magdalenas, a woman, a mountain, and an elusive butterfly all have in common? That's part of the mystery in the first novel from award-winning naturalist Robert Michael Pyle, Magdalena Mountain. Bob grew up in the high country of Colorado, where he developed a passion for nature in general and butterflies in particular. He earned a PhD in butterfly ecology at Yale University and worked as a conservation biologist in Papua New Guinea, Oregon, and Cambridge. As an author, Bob has 22 works to his credit, including Where Bigfoot Walks, Sky Time in Gray's River, Chasing Monarchs, Mariposa Road, and Wintergreen, which won the John Burroughs Medal for a Distinguished Book of Natural History. Magdalena Mountain was released last week, and we're fortunate to have Bob on the line with us from his home in Grays River, Washington, to talk about his new novel. Bob, welcome to KBOO.
Well, thank you so much. I'm happy to be back with KBOO.
Bob, we might as well get the most obvious question out of the way first. You've written 22 books, mostly nonfiction, but some poetry, and you mentioned even a coloring book, basically focused on your studies as a naturalist. Why a novel at this point in your career? And I should add that I saw on your Facebook page, you'd say it took 44 years and 10 drafts to finish Magdalena Mountain.
That's correct. So it's not as if I'm launching, Ken, on a novel this late in my career. I launched when I was a young man, when I was a graduate student, and I'd already been doing a fair amount of scientific writing and nonfiction writing. I had only published one book at that time, a butterfly book, but I was always a reader of fiction, and a lot of the fiction I loved had to do with natural history, people stories, but including more than people. And I was especially impressed and moved and inspired by a book called Wings in the Meadow by a friend of mine, Joe Brewer, who was a great butterfly educator and writer. Wings in the Meadow told the story, dramatized story, but realistic, of a particular monarch during its migration. And I love that book. And so I, having, as you said, spent a good deal of my time as a youth, although I grew up on the wrong side of Denver from the mountains, I got up into the mountains as much as I could. My stepmother had a cabin at Crested Butte, and that took me right up into the high West Elk Mountains, where in the summer of 1959, when I turned 12, I discovered this butterfly called the Magdalena Alpine. I don't mean I discovered it, but it was new for me. I knew about it from my Colorado Butterflies book. I was absolutely taken with it and fascinated by it, fell in love with it. And I thought, perhaps I could write a book like Joe's Wings in the Meadow for young readers about this black butterfly that, instead of migrating like a monarch, it flies up and down the rock slides of Colorado. That's how it began. And that's why it was going to be fiction, because it was going to be a story about this butterfly. But I fairly soon became a little bit bored with that because I didn't know enough about the butterfly to write it the way she did about the monarch. The other thing was I found that I really wanted to write an adult story, a full-scale novel with people in it. But I wasn't a mature enough writer to do that at the time. And that's why it took a long time. We can talk about that. But I wanted a long time ago to write fiction as well as natural history-inspired nonfiction. Not a new thing for me, really. And I have written and published short stories over the years. However, I've been with this one novel all that time. I've started a couple others in that time, but this novel's been with me, as I say, for 44 years.
Well, I'm glad it's released now and published. In addition to Joe Brewer, Bob, you've been compared to other writers whose knowledge and love of nature influenced their fiction. Vladimir Nabokov, a big butterfly fanatic. Peter Matheson, Barbara Kingsolver. You mentioned Edward Abbey in the book itself. Were these writers also inspiration for Magdalena Mountain?
Quite so. Very, very much so. They were people whom I've read a great deal. I know. Well, I never met Nabokov, though. I did make a pilgrimage to him, but I was too late. I did, however, get to co-edit a great big book of Nabokov's butterfly writings with his biographer Brian Boyd and his son Dmitry. So I've got a pretty strong Nabokov collection. I've read a lot of it and have discovered some things in his writing and in his archives. And Barbara Kingsolver, I'm lucky enough to have taught with and know fairly well. Matheson, I've read with and admire beyond all bounds. I mean, I'm so honored to, and I New Abbey a little bit. So, yes, there are people in my life, but they're also extremely inspirational to me.
In the intro to this segment, we mentioned the book's three Magdalenas, two of which are fictional. There's a woman, the character Mary Glanville. There's the title mountain, of course, Magdalena Mountain in Colorado, and a butterfly. And this is the butterfly you mentioned, the Magdalena Alpine Butterfly. Can you tell us a little bit about it? You describe it as stunning black velvet. And I actually looked up pictures, you know, on the internet, and it's absolutely beautiful butterfly.
Isn't it, though? I'm glad you did that, Ken. And we're touched by it also. It really is black velvet, especially when it first comes out of its chrysalis. And in fact, when it's brand fresh, it has some iridescent scales that also refract some purple and some green, almost as in a violet-green swallow. They wear away in a few days, and it's black. And then after days and some short weeks, if it's lucky enough to live that long, it fades to a lovely brown plush. But when it's fresh, it's this black velvet. I'm looking at my cat right now across the long grass in the front here, and it's as black as that, this silky black. But it's the only butterfly in the world that's completely black like that, top and bottom, not a single marking other than the black scales. So when I first saw that as a boy of 12, having read about it and what a prize it was among butterfly collectors and so on, up in the high Rockies above Crested Butte, Colorado, I was carried away by it. And I've been passionate about it ever since. And I've studied it, I've published on it, I've done some experiments with it. But I have a very strong emotional and aesthetic attachment to it as well. It's just a splendid animal. And it lives in a very compelling habitat up in high rock slides, mostly granite, in the high Rockies from about 10,000 all the way up to 14,000 feet. And it unlike the monarchs which migrate or certain other butterflies that find their mates on hilltops or in valleys, this one courts by the males flying up and down the rock slides, flying up and then gliding down, looking for the females who are hanging about in the rocks around the patches of grass, which is their caterpillar host plant, and the patches of pink and yellow flowers that are their nectar plants. So it's quite a dramatic courtship, and a collector or someone studying it or watching it goes up to these rock slides and tries to see it coming on down. And some of the action of the book, including the rather, I think, dramatic conclusion, not the conclusion, but the sort of the climax of the book takes place up on these high rock slides. So this butterfly caught my attention, caught my imagination, and when I began writing this story, I decided to have a series of characters, or perhaps they decided, all of whom would be touched by the butterfly, affected by the butterfly, have a particular interest in the butterfly from different standpoints. One of them has a scientific interest in the butterfly, one of them a sort of a metaphysical, spiritual, intellectual connection. Another one has a commercial collection. He's sort of a beachcomber, vagrant, scavenger who collects butterflies for museums. So he's got a commercial interest. They all come together on the high rock slides and in this area of the Front Range of Colorado through the agency of the butterfly. And then their stories mingle and stuff happens. It does in fiction.
Right. The butterfly, of course, is what they're all seeking. It's this common quest, and as you mentioned, for different reasons.
That's right.
So I want to continue with butterflies. Back in 1971, Bob, you founded the Xerces Society, and that's an international nonprofit formed to protect wildlife. I wonder if you can tell our listeners a little bit about the Xerces Society, its mission, and how it's got its name.
I'd be delighted to, Ken. I was interested in butterfly conservation since I was a boy, really, as I began to watch the habitats for special butterflies around Denver, around Aurora, Colorado, where I lived, evaporate before development and the vast spread of the human needs across the countryside. My mother was interested in conservation, and there's a conservation library, an early date at the Denver Museum, at Denver Public Library. And I had a couple of teachers with a strong interest in conservation way back in the 50s and early 60s. So because of all this, as my interest in butterflies grew and my expertise, I became particularly interested in conserving populations of rare butterflies that were under threat. So when I went to college at the University of Washington at first, and I studied natural history and conservation biology, and then conservation in my graduate work there in the forestry school at first. And I wanted to pursue this, but there was absolutely no place in the world to pursue butterfly conservation studies except England. There's a laboratory in England called Monkswood Experimental Station where studies were going on in rare and endangered insects and conserving and managing their habitats. They were way ahead of everyone else. And I was fortunate to get a Fulbright Fellowship to go study there with a mentor named John Heath. That was formational in my life. I had great mentors in several key parts of my life, and that was one of them. When I was fairly deep into my studies there, I realized we don't have any mechanism, any organization or means or fulcrum or power lever or any of those things to pursue this work and this activity back in the States. I went to a lecture in London one night about the large blue butterfly, one that they were losing in Britain. They didn't know why. They eventually lost it, but they found out why, and they were able to restore it from the Swedish population. But that's a long story. At that time, they were simply saying, if we lose the large blue, let's take it as a symbol so we lose no more British butterflies. And that's going into quite a movement in Britain. Sir David Attenborough is the honorary president of the British Butterfly Conservation Group. And they go from strength to strength. But they've only got about 60 butterflies in the country, and, of course, a huge population. So they've got a lot of work to do with a few butterflies. I realized on the train back north that night from London that we had already lost a butterfly, and we had a lot more to work with, but a great deal of threat. And the butterfly we lost was called the Xerces Blue. And so I said, right, let's have the Xerces Society named for this extinct butterfly to pursue butterfly conservation, which later grew into invertebrate conservation. And now 47 years later, my gosh, we better start planning the 50-year party. They're based in Portland, you know, and they're worldwide, but they have a staff of 55 in five states with a budget over $5 million under the stewardship of the executive director, Scott Hoffman Black, and a whole staff of wonderful entomologists, botanists, conservationists. So I'm so proud of them. They're like my grandkids. I have some real grandkids, but I also have all these grandkids that work for the Xerces Society carrying out this mission. I'm just the old man who gives them advice now and then, the Amanat's Grease, if you will. Yes.
Well, Bob, you mentioned Portland as the headquarters of the Xerces Society, and you're going to be here in a few days reading to Powell's, the Cedar Hills Crossing location, this Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Can you give our KBOO listeners a preview of what to expect?
Yes, I will. Thank you. They're going to get one of the very first readings of this book that I've ever given, even though I've been working on it for 44 years.
Right.
I think it'll be a reading that they'll find diverse. It's going to have some pensive parts, but it's also going to have some I hope, strong, straight nature writing about the Magdalena Alpine, because I decided to do an experiment with this book, which is to bring traditional nature writing of the sort that people might expect from my books like Wintergreen or Chasing Monarchs. Nature writing simply being literature that has more about other plants and animals than most literature. There'll be some of that, because I've tried to tell those kinds of stories about one particular Magdalena Alpine, whom I personify. I don't anthropomorphize it with language or anything, but I do take one Magdalena. I call it Erebia. That's the name of the genus. It's Erebia Magdalena. And we follow its life through the summer with the pikas and the marmots and the ravens up there in the rock slides. So I tell its life in short chapters, not asking too much from people who just come to the book for a story, but getting them to read something about the texture of the land and the place. And then its life intersects with those of these several people who have come in search of its species. And the stories all intertwine, the human and the animal, and then they resolve separately afterwards. And so I'll be reading some from the human stories, some from the butterfly story, and then the conclusion of my reading will be from the drama of the book, because there is a mystery. It's not a murder mystery, but there's a word game mystery, about the name Magdalena, which in the story proliferates through the Front Range of Colorado. So there are half a dozen things named Magdalena: the mountain, the old monastery, the pink granite little chapel on the rock. These are real places, but they have different names in real life, and in the book they've all become Magdalena, so the name proliferates, and that's part of a mystery. But there's also drama and menace and a bit of terror pertaining to a human conflict that plays out on the mountainside, and I'm going to be reading a bit of that as well.
We look forward to that, Bob. And again, thanks very much for joining us today on KBOO.
Ken, thank you so much for having me on one of my very favorite radio stations. I love KBOO and its presence in the world, and I wish you all the best, and thank you so much for the attention you've given to me, my writings over the years, and to Magdalena Mountain.
We've been talking with award-winning naturalist Robert Michael Pyle about his new novel, Magdalena Mountain, from Counterpoint Press. Bob will be reading at Powell's Books, the Cedar Hills Crossing location in Beaverton, this Wednesday, August 29th, at 7 p.m. This is Ken Jones for KBOO's News in Depth.